We're AFC Wimbledon. We own our own club. Hello and welcome to episode three, season two of the Same Old Wombles podcast. Same Old Wombles is a totally independent, unfiltered weekly podcast featuring a bunch of football fans talking passionately about the team that we love, namely AFC Wimbledon. I'm Mark Lewis, and I'm joined on tonight's pod by Alex Foulkes, Niall Cooper, Adam Proctor, and Matthew Cooper. We'll have a little review of the Wrexham game on tonight's show. How long was the grass? And we will chat to a couple of separate fans that I've been engaged with previous to the pod tonight, namely a fan from Colchester and a guy called Mike from Sutton. And mixing things up, we'll do a bit of fantasy AFC Wimbledon five-a-side. That is season two, episode three. Welcome.
No one doubts the way you feel, though your passion's very real. I must say we're all impressed, the way the fans approach this test. The days have gone with football clubs, who live and fly just on fans' love. Davis isn't just a game, and tough decisions must be made.
Nice work. I can't believe you've been so laconic that first time.
Well, that's
and
because
factually correct. It's amazing.
I had to write the script in about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
It was the shortest intro he's ever done, wasn't it? I mean, like, you know, very good, very succinct, liked it. Missing a bit your kind of random music references from the 1970s for which no one gets, akin to the horrible questions you generally ask Adam at the end of the quiz, end of today, which will, of course, we are all still going to be eagerly awaiting for.
But I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do something slightly different. So there.
I'm excited. And we're going to go with a different sort of format, Mark. Come on.
Well, I'm excited by the fact that actually we all got to watch a game this season. So you actually have a clue who the players are now.
I still have my list to refer to, though, just in case.
Very good. All 31 in the squad. But, I mean, you know, a quick two-minute review of the game. We played a team that are expected to do rather well this season. Their own fans are trying to play things down, which is always the sign for me of a fan that is very confident they're going to do rather well. The media absolutely love them. There are loads of media around on Saturday, here, there and everywhere, behind the scenes. And it was really crackling atmosphere, supposedly sold out stadium, loads of people in hospitality, more programmes sold than any other game that I can remember. But on the pitch, we fronted up, and actually, even having missed a penalty, I'd say we more than deserved a draw.
Yeah, it was a solid performance. I don't think anybody let the side down. The goal we conceded was, I think Bass had it covered. It was a very unlucky deflection. Nobody, certainly not the goalkeeper, to blame for it. The only disappointment was Ali missing his second penalty. But, you know, we got another one. Frankly, I was amazed that we got either of those two penalties because, although I think they were both valid, they're both the sort of thing that doesn't normally get given. A wrestling match at a corner, and then, you know, Harry going down in what might have been described as a bit of soft circumstances. But, you know, fair play to the referee who was, you know, otherwise awful, but he gave both of those. I think it was good that Ali took the first one. It was a shame he missed it, but it was obviously the right decision to replace him for the second one, and good on James Tilley for slotting it in. You know, a draw, I'll take that against a team like Wrexham. Let me have one quick moan, though, which is an off-the-pitch moan. Reading some of our fans' statements on social media after the game, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion. I've got mine. I'm expressing it now. I'm quite happy to be disagreed with, but I just can't get people who say that because Ali missed a penalty, he should be dropped from the team altogether. I think it's fine to say he shouldn't be on penalties. I happen to agree, and it's good that he was. He didn't take the second one. But, you know, saying he therefore is awful, he must be dropped. Some of the attitudes, some of the, you know, incredibly binary attitudes that exist out there about our team, that if we're not winning every game 5-0, if we're not signing Neymar and Messi, then sack the board and it's all terrible. It's not. It's we had a good pre-season. We had a bit of a, you know, okay, solid draw away at Grimsby. And we had a solid performance this week. So, you know, let's look on the bright side. I think we're doing all right so far.
I agree, Alex. I don't know. With the social media thing, sometimes I always think to myself, either somebody take a breath before you actually post something. Have a night off. Oh, but the other time, I think people are just looking for reactions. They just want something on there to validate themselves. So there's going to be a reaction to it, and this is what happens. But dropping Ali would be ridiculous. And I think, you know, he carried on. He did fine. He did brilliant. I mean, I thought it was a good game. And actually, I was actually surprised we matched them toe to toe. We were not, they were in any way outclassed. I didn't look at anything and think, wow, we've been outclassed. In actual fact, I genuinely believe if we'd have had maybe our first choice right back, we could have nicked it. And I'm thinking, as for Ali's penalty miss, it obviously got caught up in the long grass, because it's just, you know, I mean, I don't know how people could walk through the grass. It's so long. It's just unfortunate for Wrexham, because I know they loved playing their short passes, because I saw a lot of it. No, I didn't. No, sorry. I just saw a lot of the ball going over to Palmer, who is just, I believe, in the pocket of Lewis. So, come on, man. What is that? I just love it. It's such sour grapes. You know, genuinely it is such sour grapes. And there were two fouls. You give penalties because it was two fouls. And the referee, dear me, for 1 minute, I thought he obviously wanted his own show on Disney Plus, and he was trying to get it through this means. He was, generally speaking, I'm going to say it, it was a rubbish Green Lantern. That's it.
I agree with you, Matt. I think the referee was like the other side of appalling. There were so many times when it was really obvious that the Wrexham players should have got booked or should have got there looking free kicks. And then, like, moments later, he booked or gave free kicks against us. It was just, like, shockingly bad. And, you know, the long grass stuff is just ridiculous, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's just like... it's because we've got nice weather down there. That's probably it. And it grows so quick. I mean, whatever. I mean, it's just, that's just stupid. I wouldn't drop Ali either. I thought what I liked about it, when Ali got substituted, there was a really big applause for him. And it was for him. It wasn't for him coming off. It was for him. You could tell the crowd were really appreciative because the guy put an effort in. And I just saw a team that looked like the better shape. And, you know, this is the direct result of, like, the changes that the Don's Trust board brought in and called for and advocated for, which was the idea of having a new director of football, having a new CEO. All of that is all come in, and that's come to fruition. That's what you're looking at. So, like, this is a Craig Cope team. This is the first time we've had Craig Cope properly looking at having all those people put together, you know, choosing that sort of stuff. And that was a structural thing that was identified by the Don's Trust that was then implemented. So this is like fan-owned club actually making the changes that were needed that have happened, and that's why it's gone better. So, you know.
Yeah, I guess, I'm not going to follow on from that, but I'm sure Niall is correct. I enjoyed the game a lot. I thought that the performance by all the players was what we want, which is that you can see they're really up for it, you know. Ali, I don't want to dwell on Ali missing the penalty. He clearly has got to practice more of penalties. He's not as good as you want, but in terms of what he does on the pitch, who cares? Have someone else take the penalties then. Because what he was doing, I mean, after, so with that penalty, he missed it. He's clearly upset. You see that. And then, like, 5 minutes later, he almost steams through about three players to try and score a goal, because he obviously wants to kind of make up for that poor hit. And I think played his socks off, like most of our players. In that game, you know, I mean, if people were calling for JJ to have some, you know, spine and attitude, him and Skiverton got booked, you know, for whatever they were saying when they weren't even, I don't know what they were doing, but the ref clearly was doing some mad stuff. I don't know why they got booked.
Apparently, there's a regulation amongst all these new regulations they're supposedly bringing in, some of which are being enforced and some of which aren't. You're only allowed to have one person in the technicals area at one time. But how that works, when obviously every manager has an assistant or two or three, that they engage with all the time. So Skiverton came into the technical zone, and some of our subs apparently stopped to watch the game. And that apparently was not something the fourth official liked. So that's why he got booked. And presumably, JJ pointed out in blunt Anglo-Saxon terms how much of a ridiculous decision that was.
Yeah, I got to admit, when I looked at it, when I saw the, it did look like someone, there was some sort of suggestion that there shouldn't be more than one person in the box when the referee was sort of signalling. So I thought, oh, is that, I didn't know that was a rule, but obviously that must be a new tweak.
There's a new swathe. There's a whole swathe of new rules that have come in, haven't they? Which, and this one's gone under the right. This is just, I mean, can there not be some common sense in football? It just seems absolutely ludicrous.
What difference does it make if there's a couple of people in the technical thing?
Look, for this one, if that was the reason, then I'm not going to blame the referee for it, because referees are told you have to enforce the rules. They're not given discretion on most of these things. So it's a ridiculous rule, but I'm not going to blame the referee for upholding it, particularly early in the season. Hopefully it'll be one of these things that as the games go on, referees are told, OK, don't worry about that one so much.
Adam and Niall and Matt, that was your first game, I believe. So you're the first time to see new players and a new kit. And Niall supposedly particularly different kit, which doesn't look like a different kit at all. It's just got a number on the back. What was your impression then? Can you now tell your James Ball from your James Tilly and your, Sasu from your Ogundere?
I can when I've got the photos on my phone for the, my favourite looking players and my favourite exciting players. So that helped me identifying players later on. I did slightly embarrass Evie when we managed to get to the Silver Lounge area by going, there's one of them, that one, there's another one of them. And I'm not sure which ones they were. I think one was Davidson and one was someone else. Maybe Pell, I'm not sure.
Davidson's a man bun. That's true.
I think I might have seen Davidson, but didn't clock his hair to begin with. No, because he had like plaits or something, I think.
Yeah. Adam, who's your favourite looking player then?
Who's my favourite looking? Omar, probably, yeah, at this point. Yeah, yeah.
Who's it?
Bugles. He's my favourite looking, favourite playing. And I got to meet him, so I'm like happy.
Omar and Adam sitting in the tree.
But when I say looking, it's when I'm talking about looking, it's the way they play.
It's and, gone now, you know, Adam. Adam's gone.
Adam, it's. Adam, oh, exactly. Man, I love it. I think this is the openness that we have in
embrace your homosexuality.
I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, we've got no problem with Adam. It's fine.
Yeah.
Oh my word.
Can I ask? So, do we have a favourite? What was our player of the match?
Well, you already know mine.
Well, Tilly won it officially because he rammed the penalty in. Yeah. I didn't think he had a great game.
Frankly. I thought Tilly had a great game. I really liked Tilly. I thought he was... So I do know my difference between my James Tilly and my James Ball. James Ball was that bloke that came on late, and Sasu was that big, lanky bloke up front who's quite thin-looking.
Yeah.
There you go.
No, Sasu looks really good, but I think he definitely needs to bulk up a bit because he got kind of shoved off the ball a few times, and I thought, well, yeah, that's... So
he is about as thin as a beanpole can get. You know, it did look like that. I thought they were all right. Generally, I thought the new players look good. I don't know how good looking I think Omar really is. I'd have to have a think about it. But we can come back to that and have that conversation next week. That's one for next week's pod. And we can ask people to input in. Who do they think is the best looking player that we've got?
Well, I have to say, Joe Lewis, quite apart from sharing a name with my wife, he walked past me as we were leaving the ground later on, having stayed for a beer. And yeah, he's a good looking guy, and I had a quick chat with him, and he's very softly spoken. I can see why he's a hit with the ladies. I was quite impressed that his shorts are so tight he still managed to get Ollie Palmer inside them and hidden all afternoon. It's quite impressive.
What is going on with those shorts?
Has he got a do we do sponsors for?
Yeah,
there won't be enough space on it.
Yeah, there's no space.
I thought my player of the match. I'm reminding myself again. Our number six, Ryan Johnson. I thought he was brilliant. I thought he did really, really well. And I'm dead pleased with Bass. I thought he pulled off a brilliant save right at the end. He's very confident. So You can see the difference. You can see
he's a confidence keeper, Matt. That's what you're saying.
No, don't say
I don't
that.
Think he's a confident. He's definitely I think he's not a confident keeper. Not a confidence keeper.
But I mean, I know I saw some more preseason than you guys, but can you understand now what I meant by the ball comes in, you actually have general straightforward confidence. You don't know how to take a deep breath and wonder whether or not a goalkeeper is going to catch the ball.
Yeah, I mean, there's something about the way he moves, everything. I just think he's great, a great keeper.
Something about the way he moves, there's a pop song.
Yeah, something about the way he moves.
We were all singing it.
So, anyhow, Johnson would be my man of the match. What about you, Mark?
Considering he was playing out of position, and I understand why they played Pierce to do the wrestling match with Palmer, which worked. But the reality is that Adam asked talked about this on the previous pod. If you play Pierce and Brown together, then on that side of the pitch, you are really asking for a quick right-sided player to attack you, and we wouldn't have anything really much to defend against. So I'd say, again, Johnson, he just looks so calm on the ball. And having a proper, calm, left-footed player, either centre-back or out of position at left-back for most of that game, who knows that he's not just going to lump it completely aimlessly. A couple of times he played a couple of nice little 1-2s with a teammate to get us out of trouble. Wrexham were a big, talented team. What I found interesting is my dad was there, and he doesn't get to many games. He lives in Somerset. And another guy, Simon, who helps us out selling programmes, is the first game he's ever seen Wimbledon play. So they're both neutrals. I mean, my dad hasn't seen us play much. He thought we were a bit out of shape, which is a bit unfair, but then he's probably only watched Premier League football. Simon's a Man U fan, so he's completely neutral. Obviously, he lives in Wandsworth, so that makes him an ideal Man U fan. Anyway, Simon was saying he thought Ali was a cut above everyone, rather than having a poor game at all. And that was even before he had the shot that was well saved, and even before he missed the penalty. But both of them said, you know what? Wrexham are not all that, and we more than matched them, as we've all been commenting. And if neutrals are saying that, then that's good to know that it's not just our myopic view.
I think it's interesting that Parkinson came out after the game and said those things about, you know, the long pitch and us being physical. It's just like, I didn't see any real evidence of us being different to them. But it for me, it just proves the how precarious I think he thinks his job is. That's the nervousness there, because there's a lot of expectation and there's a lot of money that's gone into that squad. And I think they would have expected to have at least 3 points by this stage. So I think there's nervousness around Wrexham at the moment, around him.
Yeah, they are expected to win. They are the Man City of our division. They're expected to win and win comfortably in most games. They're going to get all the TV time that Salford don't eat up. They're going to get all the neutrals say, oh, this is a fairy tale story. Some of which we had in the past as well, but not so much since we got back into the league. And when they don't win every game, which obviously they won't because nobody does, if they don't get promoted, which I don't think they will, then that pressure is going to be on. People expect them to start cruising until they perhaps reach the championship and then start having to fight for things. But life doesn't work like that. Football certainly doesn't. So, I think they're going to struggle a bit. I think they're going to fail to live up to the huge expectations that everybody's put on them. And in a way, I think that's good for football. I don't think even your Hollywood types should be able to come in and just buy success. It should be shared around based on merit. And, you know, if only the money was shared around a bit more fairly as well.
There's a high horse there for Miles.
In there for me, that was such a kind of like, if only there was an organisation that was campaigning for fairer flow, financial flow in football. We're working on it, Alex. We're working on it.
Oh, is there? Somebody should talk about it a bit more.
Episode 3.
Well, okay.
That was a joke.
Shut up.
Moving
smartly. Oh, you've got him going.
Alex, you're backing it. I'm trying to get Tim Farron to speak at the conference about it. I'll be there at the Lib Dem conference talking about it all.
More than I will.
Someone has to be. Okay. I'm going to take a quick pause there. I've pre-recorded a couple of things which we're going to add into this week's episode. Namely, we have a couple of games coming up away from home this week, away tomorrow night, Tuesday night at Colchester. And I had a chat with a lifelong Colchester fan called Phil Hart, who is particularly unimpressed by Ipswich fans. As you will hear in the little excerpt, we're going to have a quick chat with him about, and this is actually Colchester's first game, first home game of the season, because their game somehow managed to be postponed in the first day of the season due to torrential rain. So let's listen into the latest episode of View from the North Stand with Phil Hart from Colchester. Welcome to, on the hot on the heels of our creditable draw against Wrexham at the weekend. We are talking in the same old wombles now to the next opponent that we will be facing, naming Tuesday night. We're playing away in Essex at Colchester United. So we're talking today to Phil Hart, Colchester fan, man and boy. He has other football allegiances, as he'll talk about. We're just going to get a little flavour of how Colchester are getting on this season and fire some quick fire questions at him to see exactly what his potential feelings are about some other local teams in that neck of the woods. Welcome to the same old Wombles, Phil.
Thank you very much. Yeah, good to be here.
So you and are in that unique position where the game coming up now against Wimbledon, not Tuesday night, is actually your first home game of the season because you had an unfortunate mishap to miss the first game.
That's right, yeah. It's, there can't have been many games that have been postponed due to waterlogged pitches in August, but that was the situation that we faced in our first home game of the season against Swindon. It was forecast, but it wasn't forecast to be as heavy as it was. It was by all accounts absolutely biblical. I think over an inch of rain fell in the sort of space of, I don't know, an afternoon or something crazy. It's always disappointing to have games called off. You know, you feel for travelling fans because these decisions can't be made in advance when the heavens open like that, and those fans would have set off. I know I've been in similar situations traveling to games where snow has fallen and the game's been called off, and we've been almost at the city we were away to, and so it happens. But yeah, like you say, Tuesday against yourselves, our first home game of the season, and we traditionally struggle for early attendances in Essex for whatever reason. Years gone by, it was always the V Festival, so we always had, you know, people were that's a big draw for people in Colchester for some reason. Lots of families tend to be away on holiday, as indeed I was for the Swindon game, so not too bothered about the postponement. So we do traditionally struggle for attendances, even more so on Tuesdays. So don't expect a thronging crowd.
Well, you have one of those interesting stadiums that I've never been to, and unfortunately I'm not going to get a chance to go this season, but you kind of drive past it quite a lot if you're on your route going up towards Suffolk or Norfolk or whatever. Yeah. And I remember a random situation of stopping with younger children at the service station there, and they said, "Dad, there's all these random tall blokes with tracksuits on." And it turned out they were presumably Colchester United players, because it would have been about, I don't know, 11:30, 12 o'clock or something on a Saturday. Yeah. And they were just stopping off for a little snack. Probably not really like pre-match meals that you should encourage. So we're talking the day after we've just done a fairly hot-tempered, close 1-1 draw with Wrexham. You guys had a long trip up to Bradford, to West Yorkshire, and came away the wrong side of a 2-1 defeat. So how would you assess the earliest part of the season? I guess only a couple of games you've played.
Yeah, I mean, we had Cardiff in the League Cup on Wednesday, it was, because they played on Sunday. So we had to wait a day to play that. And I was expecting Ghana to probably play our full-strength team, given that we hadn't played against Swindon, you know, get some minutes into their legs. So I was surprised to see sort of a couple of our sort of bigger name players, I suppose. You can't really call it vested because I haven't played a game. But he did have a little bit of a mix and match. And it started off really badly. You know, went two down relatively early. despite having quite a bright opening. But then, yeah, to fight back to 2-2 was, yeah, quite encouraging. There were some good signs. We've got a young lad that we signed from West Ham last season, Jaden Fevrier. He's traditionally a left-footed player, wide left player. We had him at right wing back, sort of almost like a modern inverted fullback, I suppose. But he ended up with two assists, gave his fullback a torrid time. But then you look at the Cardiff lineup, and it was all, you know, reserves, youngsters, whatever. And so it's hard to gauge. But then again, yesterday, I wasn't at the game. I was at a family barbecue, but you know, keeping up with it and caught up with people that I know at the game. And again, you know, we had positive signs. Took the lead through a lad we've got on Joe Taylor from Luton on loan for the season. He's now got 2-2, so he'll be one to watch on Tuesday. But that's if Garner plays him. That's the thing with Garner. You never know who he's going to pick. And I think getting that settled 11 is probably key to how well we're going to do. But he does like to tinker, and he does like to sort of mould his starting 11 around the opposition. Whereas we'd like him perhaps to be a little bit more on the front foot and sort of giving the opposition something to think about, rather than worrying about what you guys are going to bring to us, especially when you're at home.
I guess relatively, we're both in the similar, as clubs, we're in a similar boat in that we don't have necessarily always the first pick or the resources to have exactly all the different players that we want. And, you know, you just mentioned players coming in from other relatively close by clubs. So we have a similar situation, players that have played for Charlton, players that have played for Millwall or Gillingham, for example, in previous years. I guess, is it a little early then to judge on the recruitment you've managed to do so far this transfer window?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think Garner came in, so you know, we've been perennial sort of relegation candidates for a little while now, and you know, ever since the Championship years, we've just had year after year after year of decline, and that was looking like not changing again last season. But then we had Matt Bloomfield came in, was actually sort of, we threw the through the checkbook at Matt and sort of said, right, you know, go and get the players that you want, the players that you need. And he did that. And then, of course, Wickham came calling. And I think, to be fair to Bloomfield, you know, I'm not going to be too critical of someone that leaves for their kind of, you know, he'd been there most of his career, whatever. He'd been a coach there. He was always going to return to management at some point at Wickham. He sort of, you know, cut his teeth at us, but only for a really short amount of time. And it was just unfortunate that Ainsworth was taken by QPR. And then that kind of natural succession of, you know, managers, you know, sort of clicking up into the next role. And that just happened to be Bloomfield. But then Garner came in. He had done well at Swindon before things went a bit wrong, as they tend to do at Swindon quite regularly. But he had to work with, because the window was shut, and he had to work with what he'd been left with by Bloomfield, and he's sort of done quite well at that. It tightened us up at the back, got us playing a more attractive style of football. But you know, it's playing a short passing game, you know, based on movement and, you know, sort of one touch football is great if you've got the personnel to do it. And I think that's we're getting there. So I think, you know, I felt very optimistic about the chances this season. And when I say very optimistic for a Colchester fan, that means mid table, okay? Because we've had far too many dalliances with the Football League trapdoor in recent years. So mid table, you know, I had a decent head of hair about 5 years ago. ever since that, it's been a down. Yeah, it's not been good. But no, I think it's the signs are there that we're trying to do the right thing, that we are, you know, sort of trying to play a certain way. But I think we also have to accept that there's going to be some clangers. There's going to be some mistakes at the back where you're asking some, you know, some defenders, some centre backs to play tiki taka football, and they're in League Two, and they're in League Two for a reason. And we didn't have the personnel last year. We're starting to put that right, and I think, yeah. So the signs are better. If we can just score goals, which has been our biggest problem last year, then I think, yeah, mid-table beckons, and anything above that would be sweet, sweet relief.
And actually, although there are a lot of us, like those of us put together this pod, who watch Wimbledon for many, many decades and therefore are used to higher echelons, after the last couple of years when we had such a poor home record, we really would probably have relatively similar aspirations, you know, have some games at home that we actually win and therefore are delighted about and actually feel like some kind of memory. And interestingly enough, the Coventry game where we pulled out a fire in the last 10 minutes in the League Cup just last week, that was definitely one of those. And then we went toe-to-toe with Wrexham. So at the moment, as fans, as a new team unit, and I don't know whether you were at the game over Christmas where we snatched a 2-1, which I didn't think we deserved. I remember watching it, and we wandered down, and I think Ekinde hit the inside of the post, which frankly would have killed us off because we were pretty weak. But that was I think one of two wins we managed after Christmas, full stop. And that really wasn't big or clever. But the team you will see, the squad you will see on Tuesday night, that will be fundamentally different. We've recruited from different places, mainly across League Two, to be honest. But we've recruited from different places to actually form a team and a unit. I mean, yesterday, we were recording on Sunday, yesterday's game against Wrexham, we had two different penalties, which in itself, I genuinely, in 45 years watching Wimbledon, cannot remember ever having two penalties. And my dad was there, and he's older than me, and he can remember. We missed the first one. Awful penalty. Our centre-forward is excellent, but he cannot take penalties. And we got a second one and scored it. And it's like, well, that's bonus in itself. And we went toe-to-toe with a good team. So I guess we're probably more confident going into this game than we were previously. And I suppose I was going to ask you about your aspirations for the season, but you probably kind of mentioned it already. One of the things I was interested in, because obviously Colchester is a little further away from Wimbledon, but relatively speaking, it's one of the few southeast teams in League Two. So what would you rate? I don't know whether or not you had the opportunity to do much away travel, but what would you rate as the most fun away trip?
So, I mean, in terms of the best one that I've had was Carlisle a few years ago. So myself and a group of lads, every season we used to earmark one game at the start of the season. Like, that's the one I would have a bit of a jolly boys out in. And for some reason, we decided Carlisle. And it just so happened that we were, again, in a relegation battle. And we had to win that game to make sure we had any sort of chance of staying up. And we did. And it's one of those sort of perfect weekends where, you know, it's sunny, everything goes well. It's just nothing goes wrong. No one falls out with each other. No one gets blind drunk and thrown out of anything. It was just absolutely perfect. And to come away with the 3 points as well, and such a long way to go, that particular away trip will always have a place in my heart. But I think any sort of London team really is a decent away day, just because of how easy it is to get there. You know, you'd have to rely on someone to volunteer to be the driver. You can go down on the train and, you know, meet at Hamilton Hall for your Wetherspoons breakfast as part of the ritual. So all of those little things, but it's, you're right. This season, you know, my brother and I, he's a fellow season ticket holder, and so I've got two boys. They're 11 and 8. His boy is 5 and has just got into football, really. So we're sort of looking at where are the closest ones? Where can we? But it's even things like Gillingham, which, you know, relatively close, but the date doesn't work. You know, Crawley, the date doesn't.
It's also an awful away end.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's not somewhere I'd want to take children, I suppose. But, you know, we went to Cambridge a couple of seasons ago where we were 1-0 up with 5 minutes to go and contrived to lose 2-1. And both of the Cambridge goals were scored right in front of us because we were down the front of that away end there. You know, it's when you go away, you have to say that a draw is the best you can probably want, I suppose, hope for, but then anything better than that would be an absolute bonus. But as long as you just don't get tanked, that's the life of a Colchester fan. It's we've not had a lot to celebrate recently.
life of a League Two fan, I think, generally. Yeah. Okay, right, let's do some quick fire things where I literally just throw out one name at you and you just give me a quick one sentence response.
Okay.
No good or right or wrong.
I'll try. I'm not known for my succinctness, so.
Don't worry. There's always an edit button. Okay, first one would be, and I will pronounce this entirely wrong, but Junior Chamadu.
Really exciting right wing back. Great year last year. probably needs to move on, so we can all do so as a club and as a fan base, and hopefully get a nice 7-figure transfer fee for him.
Oh, 7-figure, nice.
Oh, million at least. I know the chairman was holding out for that. I think Stoke offered $300,000 up front and the rest in add-ons, which totaled $1 million. It was like, nah, forget it. We want the money up front. Come on.
Yeah, we're League Two clubs. We need to do that. Yeah, we had a similar situation with Jack Curry, our left back. With Bristol City in the transfer window in January, and it didn't come to pass. They got up to about 6 or 7, I think, plus add-ons. At the moment, he's injured, and I think he's genuinely injured, but the rumour mill's already started. You know, it's the transfer window, he's not playing, what's going on?
Yeah.
Okay, next up would be Ipswich Town.
Oh, look, is this a family podcast? I can't stand them. I can't stand their fans. I can't stand the town itself. Is an absolute shithole. I can't say anything. Even the name just makes me just want to vomit. I just hate them. And what's worse is that their fans go, oh, I quite like, I look out for you. I look out to see how you're doing. Piss off, you condescending twats with your six fingers and your carrots and your tractors. Sorry.
Absolutely love it. No.
That's edit out what you don't want there.
An unfiltered reaction, you know. Okay, let's try and cool it down a little bit, so to speak, then. Let's go a simple one with Ben Garner, your current manager.
Yeah, you know, like I said, he came in last season. The window was shut, so he had to work with what he had, what he'd been left with by Matt Bloomfield. Cowling had spent the money to furnish Bloomfield with the players that he wanted. So the quality had improved, but Garner's got his own way of doing things. I think Bloomfield's a lot more industrial than Garner. Garner's known for his sort of short passing game, attacking football. So bring it on. I look forward to seeing a few more goals at home.
Fingers crossed. Okay, and a final one. Blast from the past, perhaps. Our current manager, Johnny Jackson.
Yeah, badly treated by Paul Lambert. Paul Lambert came in, sidelined a few first team players for reasons we never really worked out, or were made clear to us. And you know, Jackson was a really talented player, as was shown by the fact that he left us and went on to have a decent sort of lower league career, I suppose. I wish him all the best. Really didn't fulfill, you know, his absolute potential with us because of the way he was so unfairly treated by Lambert.
He won Player of the Year once, I think.
Yeah, that's right. And yeah, and actually, funnily enough, on one of our chat forums, if you swear now or use a certain four letter swear word, it automatically replaces it with Lambert. So that's the feelings around Paul Lambert at Colchester. So that was a name you could have thrown at me.
I was going to say Ipswich Town or Paul Lambert. Which one's worse?
Yeah. No, it's his football was absolutely dire as well. And I think people sort of look back on that time with some sort of rose tinted specs because of the amount of money we were chucking about trying to get back up to the Championship. But you know, he went on and proved that he couldn't really sort of cut it anywhere. You know, he was never anywhere for long, was he? So, but no, wish Jackson all the best. I mean, you could have said Harry Pell as well. You know, he's another one that sort of went through Colchester and ended up at U, didn't he? And he's one of those sort of pantomime villains, isn't he? I was at your place last season when you beat us again. And the vitriol that our fans were dishing out to Harry Pell, and Pell loves it. Like the worst thing you can do to a panto villain is boo him, because he loves it and he'll raise his game. The best thing you can do for him is clap him, because he won't know what to do.
That's very true. Actually, yesterday we had Ollie Palmer, who's played for us, playing for Wrexham, and he got a decent response.
Yeah.
He had a really quiet game because he was very well marked, which is fine. And they've recently signed James McLean, and he's a controversial character, and we could probably do a whole podcast about him alone. Yeah. But he actually was encouraging it, which I thought was possibly slightly stupid. Yeah. I don't know that, from what I've read about him, he's necessarily the sharpest tool in the box, as they say. Anyway, you'll have him later on the season, and who knows what reaction he'll get there. Yeah. So, quick final thing to finish off with, match predictions for the game Tuesday night.
Well, I mean, I think if... if I was a betting man, which I am, I think both teams to score is the bet. You know what? You do seem to have a decent record against us. I wouldn't be surprised to see you come out victorious. I'm on the Colchester United prediction league. I've gone 1-1. I've gone 1-1 with Joe Taylor to score first. I think we're still getting to grips with Garner Ball, and I hate that term, but I'll use it anyway. I don't think we'll see a clean sheet. I think the young keeper we've got from Palace, great shot stopper, but the goals we've conceded have come from him pushing them out rather than gathering or getting around the post. I expect us to concede, but I'd hope to score at least one. 1-1 will be my official prediction.
Fair enough. I of course, being a positive, forward-thinking football fan, because we have to be at lower league level, we'll go for a 2-0 win, mainly actually because I've seen a couple of games in pre-season as well as a couple of games now in the competitive games. And we've just played back-to-back QPR, Portsmouth, Grimsby, Coventry and Wrexham. So actually, relatively speaking, Grimsby was the weakest opposition, and that was away on the first opening day of the season. We missed a penalty and still got a draw. So we haven't lost since we came back this season. Now, obviously, that's going to happen at some point, but we are pretty solid. We seem to be creating chances. The euphoria of the win against Coventry did hold them back a little bit against Wrexham, but they still managed to dig in and get a result. So fingers crossed there'll be lots of travelling Wombles, and fingers crossed we'll notch 3 points. Obviously, we wish Colchester the best for the rest of the season, except, of course, when you're playing us, especially when you are playing the franchise. Please take the points away from Buckinghamshire. And
we've got them next, haven't we, as well. So
good work indeed. Well, thank you very much indeed to Phil, and really appreciate you joining us on the same old Wombles.
Yeah, it's been good fun. So best luck for the season.
Thank you. Feeling confident about an away game for a change?
Who knows, mate? Who knows? We haven't seen. What do they? I think they lost, didn't they, on Saturday? Did they lose on Saturday? I don't know what they're. Who are they playing? Colchester.
They lost 2-1 at Bradford.
Okay. I mean, I have no idea anything really, but we don't know how they, because they didn't play their first game. So who knows? I'm keeping my fingers crossed for it. All I'm saying is we're looking good. The sooner we get a win on the board, the better.
I think we could go on a domino effect with that, actually. If we get a win and the confidence of the players goes up based on the confidence they appear to have to want to win, and then you add that with actually a win, I could see that kind of knocking on for a few in a row. So, yeah, I'm quite excited about the next couple of games. It'd be good to also, because then there's two away games, then we have a home match, so it'd be quite exciting to see, to see what's happened between, hopefully we can get a big buzz, And I think, again, we had a great crowd Saturday, sold out, Obviously, some people will say, well, it's because it's the FA Cup final for you when you play Wrexham, which is a load of nonsense. I think we know that we'll get a big crowd, so.
Oh, I'm not taking that at all, Adam. Our home attendance is huge. Every most games, so they got their TV subscribers to come along.
Fine, it did make you laugh. Exactly as Matt said there, though, that the Wrexham manager is already making excuses, saying that we're a really tough game and a really tough stadium to come to. Has he seen our home record? We've won like 7 home games in the last 2 seasons. It's utterly ridiculous.
The thing I was going to say about that was he's probably had quite a lot of PR training over the last year or so or whatever. So it wouldn't surprise me if any of these statements are really nice clips. Because if you have a clip where, they had long grass. I've not watched any of the Wrexham TV stuff, but that sounds like a clip.
I mean, after me, he's like, his next, wasn't he Hull City manager for a while or something like that? So the guy would have had shed loads of media training. I mean, without any shadow of doubt. But those kind of comments are, they're playing to his audience. That's all. They're playing to a TV channel. That's what it's about. It's just clickbait.
What I did find interesting, and I had a little exchange with some Wrexham fans. I was wandering around pre-match shelling programs, and that some Wimbledon fans were chanting "Soldier Soul," and the Wrexham fans were objecting, apparently, to being sung that being sung to them. To which I said to the Wrexham fan, well, fair enough, isn't it? And he genuinely couldn't understand when I said to him very straightforwardly and matter-of-factly that, no, thank you very much, I wouldn't want Ryan Reynolds and that kind of Hollywood money and glitz and glamour in my club. That just shows they clearly just don't get what our raison d'etre is as a club.
But if you talk to fans from any of the big money clubs, talk to people from Newcastle, and there are some honourable exceptions, of course, but Newcastle fans are saying, well, you know, OK, well, we might not like the politics, but it's our money. It's our bad billionaires who murder people rather than their bad billionaires who murder people. So, you know, they're all happy to take it because it's got the potential for success. Now, I'm not, of course, equating the Wrexham owners with the Saudi regime. They're good guys and they appear to be in it for more of the right reasons than some of these big money takeovers. But they're not local boy made good or anything like that. They can't claim to be putting their money into the club they've supported all their lives. And so you will get fans who will say, you know what? I don't care about the ethics of it. I just want the money. I want the success. And, you know, if you are a genuine Wrexham fan, rather than somebody who came into it since Ryan Reynolds joined up, then, you know, you sort of, you want the best for your club. And I understand that says I can't not support my club. But they shouldn't take it for granted. They should understand that others of us will object, particularly those of us who come from clubs which have been genuinely ripped away from us and where we've invested so much, both money and also passion, into getting it back on its feet again and getting it back where it almost where it belongs. So, yeah, I can understand that reaction from the Wrexham fans. But, you know, they've got to understand also that we're going to think something different. We've got a good moral case for why we think different.
I'm actually going to slightly be not as anti-Wrexham as the rest of you. Largely because the way that Ryan Reynolds is looking to invest in the club in terms of actually building infrastructure of the ground, doing investment in the local community, is in theory taking the steps towards being a more sustainable long-term club, in the sense that his direction long-term might not be as bad as a lot of other clubs. So he is investing in kind of the right ways to invest. I still think they've got a real big issue that if he was to walk away, they've got unsustainable contracts, right? So there's still a huge element about that. But in terms of a kind of person with a playboy attitude towards football, some of his investment in the club infrastructure is actually good. So he's not like the evil I can think of, you know, several other clubs who do things completely differently. You only have to look at, say, Southend, who's that owner who's basically driving the club into the ground so that the club, the football team folds, because he owns the ground separately. And actually the place where the Southend ground isn't a place of real brilliant real estate. His problem is there's a football club still there. So once the football club disappears, he's got this big real estate that he can make shed loads of money out of. That is a football owner running it wrong. So I think while I've got issues still with Ryan Reynolds, he's not the worst of them all. And certainly when you're comparing that to an owner that loves treating women really badly and killing journalists, that's a slightly different kettle of a fish. And I think we need to, that's an owners and directors test that needs really fundamentally addressing football. Because frankly, they should never have been allowed to buy a football club given their record. I mean, like, this is a owners that are committing offences that are criminal offences in the UK, and you shouldn't allow people that have committed serious criminal offences to be running a football club.
Yeah, I mean, clearly there is a difference, right? But what I'm going to say is that Ryan Reynolds might well be investing in the club, and he might well be investing in the infrastructure and the community because he's investing, and someone who invests is going to use that to, you know, they're going to want to get their investment back at some point. And I would say he's speculating that investment to push the club up to Championship, Premier League, so that he can sell it to someone else. And if there isn't any tests in place, the ones you've talked about, it's likely he will sell it to some other dodgy regime. So, I mean, I just think that there's so many problems with that generally, but also it's that I think the fact, yeah, I mean, unless the way that football is governed changes before Ryan Reynolds sells up to his get his investment money back, they're going to end up with probably a really, really bad owner, possibly in the Championship or the Premier League. But I'm, you know, that could be 5-6 years away at least. So let's see. But I mean, yeah, I just that big money in football is just bad anyway from the get go, and we've seen what it does to us, and we know why we oppose it in lots and lots of ways. And I think that it should be a little bit of a warning to say, look, you know, this investment, we want to keep an eye on that because it might. Well, who's he going to sell it to? And he will sell it. Why isn't he going? Why is he not going to keep a club? Is he?
I agree with that, Adam. And I think, you know, there is like directions of travel that will hopefully stop all of that. So, you know, we have to just work really hard to make sure that the future way football's governed doesn't allow that sort of thing to happen. So my thinking is that by the time Ryan Reynolds wants to sell it, that we'll have a much more tighter legislation around him to stop him selling it in the wrong way. And we also just need to make sure that we work hard. Well, I'll be working hard, don't know about everybody else. I'll be working bloody hard to try and make sure that the next person Ryan Reynolds sells to is a decent person rather than, you know, the many other examples we can come out with.
I'm going to get back to the question Mark asked several eons ago about our next two games, two away games. I'm not going to predict scores, but I am going to say that I think we're going to win one and we're going to lose one. And I have a horrible, horrible thought that we're going to lose to Sutton, who are a competent team. We saw that last year. They are up for it because it's a derby match, and so will we be, of course. I'm not saying it's their cup final or anything silly like that, because, you know, it's a big match for them, but it's not the be all and end all. But they know what they're doing. They love to put one over on us, and they've got certain skills and certain abilities that enable them to do so. I just hope that we get the win at Colchester, so that, you know, to be honest, if we went into, came out the first four league matches with two draws, a win and a loss, so be it. I'll take that. Plus, we got the Fizzy Cup win and away tie at Chelsea in the second round. I'm fully with Charlie Tabloid on that. It's an outrage that we haven't been selected for TV game, because for once we've actually got a genuine case for why we should be. But no, Sky's gone with a Sky presenters team. Because he's got to get the money back somehow. So, you know, we're doing all right at the moment. Thank you very much. And if we get a win under our belt in the next two, I think we'll have started the season very solidly indeed.
Yeah. Sutton is an interesting one, because I spent years looking out for their results, as, you know, when we were in the higher leagues and whatever. And even recently, in recent times, look out and having a sort of soft spot for them. I do not have a soft spot for Sutton anymore. No, it's just like it's great in one way, because I feel like it's becoming a proper rivalry. There, you know, it's and my understanding is that they are a physical direct team. I mean, obviously they'll have let the grass grow even longer than we have. So it's going to be I think it's going to be interesting. I think it'll be a spicy atmosphere. And it's going to be, it'll be a funky game. Hopefully we get the points from it.
That seems like a good moment to bring in the second little snippet of pre-match conversations I've had. I had a chat with Mike from the Sutton podcast, which is his own podcast that he's been running for a few years. And you'll discover that, in fact, maybe not all Sutton fans are Chelsea fans, or at least if they are, then he seems to think that's not such a bad thing after all. So let's listen into the second view from the North Stand this week with Mike from the Sutton podcast. Good evening and welcome to the latest edition of View from the North Stand, where we and the Seymour Wombles talk to a fan from an opposition team we're about to play. Today, we're talking to Mike from the Sutton United Team Talk podcast. Very grateful for Mike joining us. Mike is joining us the day after Sutton had a narrow 2-1 defeat away up at Barrow with 94 Hardy fans. Were you one of those 94 Hardy fans that made the journey?
No, it's outside the M25. I have like a little restraining order, a moat. We weren't expecting that many, to be fair. I think when we were talking before, we thought sort of 60, 70, but nearly 100 is quite impressive, to be fair. Barrow's a distance away.
Barrow is one of those, I think, that if you're in the 92 club or you want to be in the 92 club, then you try and get there. You try and make that particular journey. We're having a debate amongst some friends of mine who don't want to go on their own, basically. So it's like, are we going to do it? And then you look on the map and see how far it really is. It's like, that's just utterly bonkers.
We had a whole bunch who swore absolutely blind last season, never going to Barrow again. That's it. Finished. Done it loads of times. Not going again. And then the fixtures came out and it's the first away day. And they're like, oh, for God's sake, we've got to go to that one.
One of the first things I was going to ask, actually, is obviously Barrow was your first defeat of the season, I believe.
Yes.
Very impressive start to the season, thumping Notts County. So I guess, relatively speaking, not Sutton United fans are going to be feeling pretty good at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, two kind of outlier results, really. The Notts County, they had the key percent off after 15 minutes. I think we probably would have won that anyway, the way we were playing. Obviously, you can never really tell, but we were 1-0 up, and I think we may have hit the bar at that point, or maybe just shortly after. But we kind of all over them, big, strong, physical side. They obviously play very pretty football, but they're not so great against teams who are like, okay, we'll have the ball. You do what you like with it. When we get it, we'll react and do something good with it. Yeah, very, very impressive. And it wasn't just the scoreline. It was just everything we were doing. We're like, God, this is a bit different from last season. Barrow, again, is a bit of a tricky one because we had a red card after 13, 14 minutes. So it was a sort of back against the wall job. And we took the lead and we held that lead until the 78th minute, I think it was. And then we... same old Sutton. We suddenly decided to let in another goal a couple of minutes after we let in the first goal, so we ended up losing 2-1. There were chances for an equaliser, which I would have been delighted with because I went for 2-2 prediction, but yeah, it wasn't to be. But it's not the end of the world. Loads of teams are going to not get points at Barrow, so it's not that bad.
And that was what I was actually going to pick up on. In fact, both of our respective teams had, how do we put it charitably, a less than average end to last season. Sutton did particularly well, and we used the kind of home and away game against Sutton as the nadir of our particular season, or we thought it was, and then we went on to win two games after Christmas for the whole of the rest of the season. But you guys looked like you might even be pushing towards playoffs, and it fell away. What happened there?
I'll always try and be positive. That is still our second highest ever league finish, so it's still good for us. When I spoke to Matt, manager, I sort of said this season could be kind of put into a film world of the good, the bad, and the ugly. We started the season off, we were getting injuries, the players were rushing players back from injury, and we just weren't clicking and gelling. And then suddenly, mid early December thing, we just suddenly just everything went beautiful, and we were just winning games all the time. I think we had the best form in the country for a little while. As you say, we kind of come into this period of, I think it was Barrow, strangely, and then Walsall, where there were teams around us, and so, right, we need to pick up something there, and we just got nothing. We got two draws from those games, which really dented our hopes. Then we went into four big games against teams in and around the playoffs, and we just couldn't get going. I mean, then there was nothing left. So I think the players, in fairness to them, been kind of going strong for 2 years where they won the National League. They did so well the previous season. And then all of a sudden they didn't have anything to play for. And you could just almost see the tiredness just going, okay, we're safe, we're fine. But it just slightly slipped away, as you say.
And we've had that particular experience, obviously, as Wimbledon, when you get into the league, it's a few years ago now, but you have the appropriate bounce from getting into the league. Our manager at the time, Terry Brown, allowed those players that had got us into the league through the conference playoff final to have their chance in the league. They were pretty soon within the first season proved to not be good enough. And there seems to have been a bit of a turnover as well from a recruitment point of view at Sutton. Are you happy with the recruitment and how things are looking this year?
when it first happens and the list comes out and you're seeing just this long list of names leaving, and some of the names being sort of like, whoa, hang on, that's kind of like one of our key players. So, yeah, there was a bit of panic, and then nothing coming out, and Sutton are a very, very proper club. They won't announce anything until it's all done and dusted and the right time. So things were happening behind the scenes that we didn't know about. But in hindsight, and I don't mean this in any way disrespectful to the players, a lot of the players, I think there were only two players that left that it was like we would have liked to keep them. And one of them was Enzio, who he's, again, love the man, but he's never going to come on and change a game. But he can play left back, left, right back, left wing, right wing, centre mid. He can do everything for you. So off the bench, he's a great option because he can cover so many. And the other was Ali Smith, who obviously went to Lincoln. I know you guys signed Omar and Josh. Josh wasn't really ours, but he was ours. Josh, I was very keen on at the start of last season, but then he kind of fizzled out as well. Omar, great at what he did, 3.5 great years, but he again was one of the ones that went slightly off the boil, whether he knew his contract was out and he didn't want to put it in so much. But I think he kind of made us quite predictable in hindsight. Obviously, at the time, oh my God, Josh isn't playing. Sorry, Omar's not playing. What are we going to do? But in hindsight, it's like actually he did make us quite predictable in what we were doing.
See, one of the most interesting things I thought, just quickly having seen highlights of your first couple of games, you look like a really big, strong team. And that is League Two. We've seen League Two. We obviously saw League Two last year as well. Is that the way that Sutton are going to be looking to go? Is it going to be a bit of a slugfest this coming weekend at Gander Green?
I think if you watch the Notts County game, you again, in the lineup and standing next to them, you're like, oh my God, they're just big, massive monsters. And yeah, they are. They're a big threat. What's interesting on that is the first goal, the set piece, you've got a lot of their fans moaning that's, I can't remember the player's name, was marking 6'2", 6'3", Joe Kizzy, going, why have we left a guy that big in the box? I'm pretty much unmarked. It's like, because we've got 6'4", 6'5", and 6'6". You can't mark all of them with players of appropriate heights. So yeah, big, big physical presence. But if you watch, a lot of the goals had nothing to do with that at all. It's going to be, I think, for us, the same excuse that we've had for years where people lost to Sutton because we had the magic pitch. People then lost to Sutton for some other reason. And now it's going to be, oh, we lost Sutton because they're just big and they bullied us off the park. Whether the stats or the match actually backs that up or not, it is something that gets into opposition's heads straight away. So it's a good thing. I like it.
We've just played Wrexham, and Wrexham fit all of those things down to a T, really. Plus all the Hollywood hype and bullshit, frankly. The irony of Phil Parkinson's Wrexham manager then leaking after the game that, in fact, both of the penalties that were given were supposedly debatable, and there were loads of other moments that couldn't be given, when one of Wrexham's fundamental attacking modus operandi is all about that long throw, literally from the halfway line, which somehow we managed to reduce the number that were given and also negate in terms of throwing the right players at the right time to be able to get in. That wasn't lost on me. So I was actually going to ask, in terms of this being the second season, you know, obviously getting into the league was a big deal, understandably. We know that. We've been there as Wimbledon fans. What would you say was the most disappointing thing about actually getting in the league and finally seeing the Holy Grail?
Well, from that first season, it was like, why did we wait 123 years to do this? This is easy. Someone should have told us that. There's little things. Obviously, you've been around a long time, same as me. Sutton are a little non-league club, and we've always been that way. You kind of can pop down the club. You will see members of the board pretty much every day if you just pop in. They knew most of the fans, and you could have a little conversation with them. Now, with the growth of the extra fans, which is obviously very, very welcome, they don't have that quite same connect. Obviously, they do to the older fans who know them. But it's just those little tiny details that things have to become more professional. You know, things are coming in the future where development's going to happen. So my little favourite spot, I know, is one of the places that's going to be earmarked for development. I'm like, I'm standing there for 30 odd years. Please don't knock it down. So it's all the little things, but it's everything you hope and want as you're standing on those cold terraces and going to Canvey Island and stuff, going, oh, we need to get out of this and so on. But we never really thought we were going to get promoted. I'll be honest, it was that first season we were asked, oh, was it beyond your wildest dreams? It was, no, because I didn't ever dream that we were going to get into the league. But now we're there. Matt's quite open that he doesn't want to stay as a League Two club. He's pushing to move on to League One and who knows where. But the board are very aware that they've got to rush and catch up off the pitch with what's going on the pitch as well. So there's that big balance. We don't want to spend, and then go, oh, right, we're back in the National League again. So it's a big balance. But yeah, it's been quite fun, really.
And we also know, because obviously we were able to play at Kings Meadow for a period of time. It was never our home. And we spent a lot of money on something that wasn't our home. But it was only ever a tarted up non-league ground, in very layman's terms. And obviously, Gander Green Lane, I've been there a number of different times, pre-season friendlies and so on and so forth. And that particularly bizarre FA Cup game a few years back. And I was at the replay, but let's not fall out by talking about the replay. But yeah, it has a certain charm, as they say, but it's not a league ground with appropriate league facilities, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's got history, is what it's got. And you've got, you can kind of talk to some of the older Sutton fans and they'll be able to tell you some of the little bits about each of the little components and whatnot. And yeah, I've been to grounds where it's kind of identikit and you could, like, if you'd collapsed and woke up, you'd be looking around going, which ground am I in? I don't really know where I am. They all look very, very similar now, which is why I'm really pleased that Luton's got into the Premier League so people can actually kind of remember what football grounds should be like, not all lovely consumer-based.
Watching from the away end behind pillar, yeah.
Yeah, no, but it's weird. That's one thing that does irritate slightly about our ground is the, I know why it's been done, but the away end is the one that was done up first and it's very, very nice away end and you've got a nice little roof over you, so any sound the away fans make kind of reverberates, whereas we're still out in the open terraces and we're like looking going, why have we given the away fans the best part of this stadium? But again, it's one of those things that it's the easiest place to do up. It's the easiest one to get into the regulations. And yeah, in future, we may well be able to say, right, well, we're taking that back and we're moving the away fans stuck in the corner like everyone else seems to do. You guys do the at end as well, but most other places tends to be stuck away in a corner somewhere.
Yeah, well, that's what we did at Kings Meadow. And obviously now we have a situation where it's just working out which first or second half you actually want to play with the away fans behind you. Depending on whether or not you know you've got Barrow away fans or you've got Wrexham away fans, it's going to be a slightly different volume of support. Certainly a crackling atmosphere yesterday at Plough Lane against Wrexham because they brought their full capacity, as I'm sure Sutton will bring their full capacity as well. And obviously then you have the appropriate football banter, he says, in the politest terms. Okay, so this is a little bit of a quick fire thing where I literally just throw a name at you or a phrase or sentence at you and you just give me a one sentence response.
Okay.
No right or wrong answers, obviously.
We'll try.
The first one is Gander Green Lane.
Love it. It's just brilliant. And it's home. So, yeah, love it.
Exactly as we would say about Plough Lane, the first version. Okay, that was easy enough, simple. Second one would be Bruce Elliott.
I'm just going to be boring. If you keep saying that, I'm going to have to say love him. Bruce is brilliant. He's just so dry, so sarcastic. He cut you to death with a very, very quick sentence. When I had him on and spoke about Matt Gray, sorry, you wanted one quick answer. had him on about Matt Gray, and I said, we did feel at the time it was a bit of the easy option, just appointing a coach, and he nearly came through the video camera and killed me. He was like, what makes it an easy option? He just listed off all these things going, why Matt being appointed was not the easy option at the time. And I was like, okay, I'm really sorry, Bruce. But yeah, love him, brilliant, and he's just managed this thing from turning a non-league club, becoming more professional, but acknowledging what we need to stay as a good non-league team.
And obviously Bruce Elliott, as your chairman, has a bit of a small role in women and folk law as well. He was the one that very kindly agreed to the original friendly. That was the most bizarre experience where, first of all, my mum came. She'd only been to two women games in like 45 years of me supporting. And second of all, we lost 4-0, and celebrating a 4-0 defeat is just ridiculous. Yeah. But there was a hell of a lot of emotion that night because obviously that was our first game back, as they say. And you know, and I think whatever else happens and wherever else the two appropriate clubs go, we should always be grateful to.
I think we also in your sort of rise where you were playing some teams that their standards weren't quite ready for these many Wimbledon fans that you had at the time. I think we hosted a few other away games as well, or some other games. I just seem to remember some of your games being played at Gander Green Lane.
One or two. Yeah. And there was an immortal game in something like the London Senior Cup where one of our centre-backs went in goal because our regular keeper was injured. And to say he didn't have a clue about being in goal was an understatement. He came out for one cross. This is Frankie Howard, Anthony Howard, for the same old Wolves fans who remember that. It's about 15 years ago now. Came out for one particular cross and just punched it somehow, and the punch went backwards and towards the goal. And somehow we held out and we won 1-0. But, you know, it's a random game. I remember that. Okay, a couple more simple ones. Matt Gray, you've talked about before.
Yeah, he's just brilliant. Everything he does is right. It's professional. I've said this and it's boring, but he would be a good manager in any field. He knows how to manage. He knows how to say and do the right things. There was one sort of meet the manager evening we went to, and he was sitting there going, he's got 3 or 4 targets for every position over the next few years. And I'm sitting there going, I'm sorry, do you realise you're managing Sutton United? We tend to do things on the back of a fag packet. We don't do this. But he's just got everything all lined up. And every time I've spoke to him, the first time I spoke to him, I've said this many, many times, I just wanted to go on and give him 20 minutes. Doing what? I don't know, but I wanted to go and do something for him. But yeah, no, he's just really, really good.
Okay. And the last one, which is a little controversial, but feel free to shout me down. I personally grew up in around Wimbledon, so I'm obviously well aware and familiar with the area. There will be a lot of Wimbledon fans that live in Sutton, in Cosholton, in that neck of the woods, and likewise. So we also know that there are a hell of a lot of Chelsea fans around here. So is it really that Sutton is just a well-supported local club, or in fact are a lot of Sutton fans really just Chelsea fans in disguise?
There is a huge amount of Sutton fans. There is a lot of people who have us as their second club because we've been a non-league club. So back in the day, it used to be that if Sutton were away, people would go to watch Cosholton, or if Cosholton fans come to Sutton and so on. And that used to happen way, way back with Arsenal and Tottenham as well, way back. But nowadays you can't ever do that. But yeah, we were always people's second team. We weren't too bothered about it, because to be honest, because we were plodding and bobbing along being a non-league club. There are an awful lot of people who've been priced out of the Premier League, and they've kind of just come to Sutton, and probably yourselves as well, to just be like, oh, I just want to go to football. And then there's something about it that they're like, as I say, sitting in the bar having a drink, and next thing the players are all walking through and they're going, what the hell is this? So yeah, not too fussed, but there is a lot more just Sutton fans than people think. I mean, I've got one or two that I know that, yeah, they're Chelsea fans, but they've had chance to go to Chelsea or come to Sutton, and they've ended up back at Sutton going, I never thought I'd make this choice. So yeah, it's a difficult one. You'll never really ever know. But there's a hell of a lot more Sutton fans than there ever was when I was first going, which is obviously a good thing. And then there's a lot of the kids who obviously they have very strange opinions on football, and you'll have like 6 or 7 clubs in their bios because they've managed one of them in FIFA. But they're at Sutton, and you're like, okay, you know what? We'll nurture these, because in the next 20 years, they're the ones that are going to be the bulk of this club support.
Yes, they are. And I have 3 teenagers myself. So yeah, the nurturing thing is very important, and trying to listen to those fans and what the demands and wishes and the way they communicate those demands and wishes are is an interesting thing in itself. So quick final thing, match prediction for the game coming up this Saturday 19th.
Oh, God, we've got another game between then, so I haven't even really thought about this one. It's our place. You've never beaten us in a meaningful competition, so I'm going to say Sutton 3-1.
Sutton 3-1. Always like confidence. I'm going to go for Wimbledon 2-1, if only because it's a completely different Wimbledon team this year. There are 3 players that started the game yesterday against Wrexham. That started any games last season, and the Wimbledon team that played last season would have comfortably lost at least 3-0 to Wrexham, and would have just capitulated, and that Wimbledon team knew yesterday Wrexham had two or three shots second half and really didn't look that like they were going to break through, which says something about Wrexham, but also says that we went toe-to-toe with them. And like I said earlier, the two games we played against Sutton last year were really not the kind of games, not the kind of performances on and off the pitch that the club is in any way proud of. So I think there's a little bit, certainly the fans think, not, I don't think there's a real rivalry, to be honest, but I think the fans believe that we owe the players, it's last season's players, but the players, the club owes the supporters a particular performance specifically against Sutton. And we've played well this season. Time of writing, this is before the midweek's games, we are unbeaten through the whole of pre-season and a couple of league games as well. And obviously we had that great win over Coventry. You guys won in the penalty shootout as well. Well done. So we're quietly confident, but this is Sutton. And the embarrassment factor of losing, obviously, is something no one wants to contemplate.
No, I mean, the rivalry thing is quite funny because Sutton fans, it depends on your age who your rival is. So you can kind of almost pinpoint when people started supporting Sutton, if they say Carl Shorten, Kingstonian, Bromley, and you guys, you've been supporting for this many years. But I think it's useful as a tool for both clubs to kind of make it a rivalry because it gets more media attention. So hopefully one day we'll get a TV match, as long as it's 3 o'clock on Saturday, I don't care. But I think Bruce tried to say it's a friendly rivalry.
I don't think you can have a friendly rivalry. You have a friendship or you have a rivalry, you can have both, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much to Mike. We'll wrap it up there. And obviously, for the 180 or 200 minutes, or however long we play Sutton in the two games, plus in the cup games, whatever, then we are bitter rivals. For the rest of the season, obviously, thrash the franchise and anyone else. On our behalf, thank you very much. And appreciate you joining us on Same Old Wombles. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Cheers.
Let's do round things up then quickly to pick up with the amazing time we have left, which is our new game for this week, which is Fantasy Five-A-Side, where namely, this is what happens. I'm going to give you, and we'll start with Alex for obvious reasons, because his time is short. I'm going to give you guys a number of players, and you have to pick a five-a-side team. So you've got to pick one goalkeeper, two defenders, and two attacking players. That includes forwards. Okay, so you've got a whole list, but obviously once, for example, Nick Zanna has been picked, then he can't be picked again. Once Sal's been picked, he can't be picked again, and so on. So Alex's choice for goalkeepers is Seb Brown, Kelly Roos, Alex Bass, Nick Zanna, Andy Bell, and James Shea.
Kelly Roos out of those, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Your defenders are Will Nightingale, Jack Curry, Huss Biller, Paul Robinson, Jamie Stewart, Sam Hatton, Darius Charles, Barry Fuller.
If you're playing five-a-side, then you want quick players who can do some defending but also support the attack. So I'm going to go for the two fullbacks. I'm going to go for Curry and Biller.
So he's lucky because he gets to go first. Okay, in attack then, you've got to choose two out of this group. Jake Reeves, Danny Borman, Ali Al-Hamadi, Lyle Taylor, Bayo Akinfenwa, Adi Aziz, Armani Little, Morgan Williams, Tom Elliott, Ryan McLean, James Tilley, Andy Bartram, and Ayo Vassal.
Well, I've forgotten already who half of those players were because the list was so long, but... Lyle Taylor, obviously. I want somebody who's a finisher. And I probably want somebody, again, it's five aside. I wouldn't pick this five if they were playing in a full-size pitch because you want a bruiser in there. But I'll take a Uber Sal. So thank you very much and good night.
Fabulous. Thank you, Alex.
I've won the five-a-side championship.
See you at Sutton. So Alex's choice was Kelly Roos, Jack Curry, Huss Biller, Lyle Taylor and Ayo Vassal. Let's jump in with Matt Cooper. Who would you choose from that list? Or have you forgotten them all already?
We're going to have no one left, Niall.
Matt's got Seb Brown, Alex Bass, Nick Zanoff, Andy Bell or James Shea in goal.
I had forgotten them all already by the time you said that because I thought you were giving us different players each time.
Nope. No, it's okay. A squad.
Well, I'm going Bass. I've seen enough of Bass to put him in as my keeper. Whoever's last in this is going to end up.
Indeed.
Right, what defenders have I got?
Right, Will Nightingale, Paul Robinson, okay. Jamie Stewart, Sam Hatton, Darius Charles, Barry Fuller.
I'm going to go Charles and Fuller.
Good shout. Okay, and then midfield attack. You've got Jake Reeves, Danny Borman, Ali Alhamady, Bayoak and Frenwe, Adi Aziz, Armani Little, Morgan Williams, Tom Elliott, Ryan McLean, James Tilley, Andy Bartram.
Right, I'm going for Alhamady. I'm taking him from you guys. And I'm going to go the Beast. Come on, Akinfenwa.
The Beast playing for either side. I'd love to see that. You never get the ball off it.
Exactly.
I added him to the list. Okay, Adam never gets the quiz things. This is why I invented this quiz for Adam. So Adam's choice in goal is Seb Brown, Nick Zanev, Andy Bell, or James Shea.
Sorry, Niall. It's like a lot of the players I would have picked just because I like them have gone. You know, I like the look of them, obviously. Brown in goal, please.
Seb Brown in goal in the five-a-side. That'd be interesting. Okay, defence, Will Nightingale, Paul Robinson, Jamie Stewart, Sam Hatton.
I'm going to have Nightingale, obviously. Darius is obviously gone. He would have obviously fitted in my team. Instant vegan choice. Who was the other ones again?
Jamie Stewart, Sam Hatton, Paul Robinson.
Nightingale and Hatton.
Nightingale and Hatton. Okay. And then up front, Jake Reeves, Danny Borman, Adi Aziz, Armani Little, Morgan Williams, Tom Elliott, Ryan McLean, James Tilley, Andy Bartram.
Ah, oh, Bartram's in there. Okay. Bartram, please. And Aziz
is on fire.
You're surprised.
Which leaves Niall not a lot of choice. Niall's choice is in goal. Here's a choice at least. Niall has a choice in goal of Zanef, Bell, or Shay.
I'm wondering whether I just picked the team I think's the most shit. So I think I might do that. Who do I think's the shittest out of those three? Bell. Bell, I think, is the worst out of those three.
Well, the thing is, my defensive list isn't long enough, so you've only got Stewart and Hatton left. So, by default, they're your defenders.
Thanks, mate.
Okay. So, midfield attack. You've got Bullman, Reeves, Little, Morgan Williams, Tom Elliott, Ryan McLean, James Tilley.
They're not awful, actually. I'm trying to think who's the most shit out of those lot. All right, go for that again, sorry. I have to go for it.
Jake Reeves, Danny Bullman.
I think I'd be fine, Niall, with this one, if you're going shit, mate.
What? Ryan McLean, James Tilley. Yeah. There's several current players there, so you can't call them that shit.
Yeah.
And they're all pretty good.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not awful, are they? Just nobody's actually happens to be a forward. That's all.
You got Tom Elliott?
Tom Elliott. So I'm going to go with...
McLean looks good.
I'm going to go with Bullman and Elliott, because Bullman... at some point is going to have to stop running. So he must be quite old now. I'm going on current age, like being probably worn out at last, even though he's probably still running. And Tom Elliott, because he was beginning to look a bit knackered when he left us, so he must be really knackered now. So I'm current age, Bullman and Elliott as being the two that I think are probably least able to run anymore. Obviously, Nightingale... was it Nightingale and Hatton? Nightingale's probably had too much haggis and probably can't move at the moment.
Stewart and Hatton is what you've got.
I've got Stewart and Hatton.
Yeah, I've got Nightingale.
Yeah.
Okay, Stewart is obviously, he's probably in jail for hitting someone because he's quite hard. So Stewart and Bullman, I've got a team that ain't going to last. They'll just get sent off. Stewart and Bullman, brilliant. Excellent.
So having made this list, I suppose I should add mine in as well, which only leaves me with... James Shea, no defenders whatsoever. So I'm going to pick James Shea and four attacking players: James Shea, Jake Reeves, James Tilley, Ryan McLean, and Tom Elliott. Yeah, that'll do.
Tom Elliott.
Oh yeah,
that Tom Elliott. How many other Tom Elliotts are there? That wasn't bad. That was a silly little game that I thought would just mix things up a bit differently.
I like it. I like it. I
was going to say, I like the game. The problem now is that I'm basically working out what AI model can I run that would actually play the tournament with our teams, because I'm pretty sure I could figure that out, but I'm not going to do that.
I need to know how long.
If you'd like me to come up with a different group of people to do Fantasy Five-A-Side every week with different groups of players, then I'm quite happy to do that.
Yeah, totally.
You have to do one from the 1980s.
Yeah, start from the early 80s. You've got to do early 80s, mid 80s, late 80s, and so on. So you get three lots for each thing. And then each time we'll just have to each choose a goalkeeper and then each choose a defender. So, you know, and then maybe change it around.
Change the order.
So people get the first pick.
Yeah, 1980s, 5-a-side.
Are we excited about Chelsea, or are we really quite indifferent and we just want to take the money?
I tell you what, my daughter, Tabby, she is now a season ticket holder. She is made up about going to the Bridge. She's very excited.
No, Evie's the same.
Because all of her mates support Chelsea. You know, a lot of her mates.
Amelia is unfortunately away on doing Duke of Edinburgh, but she was toying with coming back for it because she really wants to go as well.
Yeah. I'm nervous about being hammered.
I don't think Chelsea will play any decent team at all. The League Cup, it'll be like...
Yeah, you say that, but they're not in Europe. They've only got the FA Cup and the League Cup to play for.
They'll want to get a trophy this season. And the League Cup is often seen as like the start of trophy, isn't it? When you're rebuilding, it's seen
That's
as...
That's what
the...
Mourinho did.
Yeah. So... I mean, and even if they don't start with their strongest side, you could bring five people on and suddenly you're like facing...
I think who's on the bench, basically. And I reckon it'll be a stupidly strong bench. So if something goes pear-shaped, they'll be like, right, bring these five people on.
It's now what West Ham did in the FA Cup that year. They started a strong team. They did bring on somebody who's worth something like 30, 40 million when that actually meant something. And he didn't. But there you go.
The thing is, the Premier League is a totally different game of football. That's the thing. And we just can't play that kind of football. You know, you watch one... I struggle to watch Premier League games because it's so different. The pace, the way they play the ball, it's a completely different game. And as soon as you bring on some of those people...
But Adam, we'll just turn up early, make sure the grass is long and hoof the ball in the air.
Yeah.
You know, all I genuinely hope is that, you know, thinking about the way we played against Spurs when we were at Wembley and we got so excited about getting a corner because we were so outplayed. And when we went to Arsenal and we basically just barely even made a tackle. Even if we can't compete for 90 minutes, we try and compete for, 45. You just want to actually put on a decent show, because we all know, we've all got friends. And like we just said, all our, our respective teenage children have got mates and whatever else who are Chelsea fans as well. So they will rip the piss out of us if they beat us 5-6-7, irrespective to the fact that we're down in League Two,
But when we turn them over, it'll be bloody hilarious. Excellent.
That will be hilarious. Likewise, as Alex just said, if we can turn Sutton over, that will be hilarious as well.
I've got more faith in us beating Chelsea than I have of us beating Sutton.
That's the weird, wonderful way of football works. All right, gents, I'm going to wrap it up there. Thank you very much for joining me, everybody, this evening. We've been the Same Old Wombles. Once more, you can find us on sameoldwombles.com, on Facebook, and on Spotify, out every Tuesday morning. And we've got a couple of games coming up at Colchester and at Sutton. Come on, you dons. We'll see you next week.
The old hometown looks the same as I step down from the train, and there to meet me is my mama and papa. Down the road I look, and there runs Mary, hair of gold and lips like cherries. It's good to touch.